I originally wanted to describe today in my Sunday feast the outer journey of Arjuna, who was a prince, and also his inner journey, how he was fighting his doubts on his path, how he eventually came to submit himself to Krishna. But I decided, it's so hot today. And if it's too difficult and too many points, and which I think was there for Arjuna, and which is like Arjuna, every one of us plan for his or her. And at one time, become confronted with a higher plan, a better plan, a greater opportunity. And then it is always a question of whether we will stay or in our old circumstances, or whether we are bold enough and trusting enough to move the next step forward. I believe in everyone who is today here, it should not be so difficult to identify one step in your life which you feel you should be doing, but which you are at the moment a little afraid to take. Can you think of something? It's too hot for the thinking. I know, for instance, some of us think, maybe I should get initiated. But we are a little bit, I'm not sure if the, what if I do it and there will be no help? I know that some of us feel, I'm now old, elderly, I don't think I should stay all the time in South Europe. That's my polite term for the Balkan regions. Perhaps I should travel to a holy place in India, like Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, Vrindavan. Or maybe there's someone of you who likes to smoke cigarettes and you feel, it's not good, and I know it's not so. In spiritual life, no one smokes, only some yogis in the Himalayas. But I'm not of that category. But you think, when I give this up. Or another may think, yes, I know, it would be good to become a vegan. I'm already vegetarian, but I know it would be good because then the cows would not have to suffer so much, or I would not be an instrument to let the cows suffer. And we feel, maybe I should do this step, but what if I miss the cheese too much? There is no good alternative for cheese in the vegan diet. Or someone will think, I know Krishna wants me to do this. I feel there are so many signs and so many indications. And I know what is right, but I'm a little bit afraid to move forward too fast. What if I jump and no one is there to catch me? Let me tell you about my grandfather's trauma. My grandfather had a traumatic condition. He was in Bremen. He was working there, and he was living in an apartment under the roof when the house in which he lived caught fire. The fire quickly spread and went into the staircase of the house, so he could not go down by the staircase. He was trapped under the roof. So some of the neighbors had seen this, and they had come and they brought some cloth, and they were holding it, you know, six people around a big bed sheet, and they said, "Idemo, you know, jump." So my grandfather is about double as high as from here to the ceiling. He's really high. He was very high. So, and he said, "But you are weak. I'm very big, you know. I'm like a giant, and you are like dwarfs." No problem. We are, you know." They were leaning in like this. So my grandfather decided, "Okay, let me jump." And he jumped, and he broke his neck. Not neck, his back. They couldn't hold him, you know. He was too heavy, like he had prophesied. So I think, so he always said to me, "Don't do any steps in life where you don't know if you will be caught." And I remember when I came to him and said, "Grandfather, I feel called to the path of the monk. I want to become a monk." The grandfather said, "Well, you will have no education, you have no money. What if you jump like I did when I lived in Bremen? There's no one and nothing there to hold you." I said, "Grandfather, when I surrender to Krishna, Krishna is there to hold me." When he heard me saying this, he started to laugh. That's what we thought in the First World War. That's what all the religious people think. If they surrender to God, God will help you. Have you studied history? It's not always the case. I said, "See, I never really liked school. I'm not like Sriji who likes school. You like school or middle? No?" That is an answer like Madhva Muni would give. I personally could not find deep interest in school. But I was trained by my grandfather. He taught me literature. He taught me many things. He was a giant in many ways. He was the best influence next to Prabhupada whom I had. I mean, Prabhupada was my spiritual teacher, and I've learned most of what I'm know today from him. But I've learned my worldly knowledge from my grandfather. And I thought, perhaps he is right. Perhaps there will not be any answer when I call. Do some of you look at movies? No. I've learned this. When there's silence in the balcony, it means outside silence, but inside there's a big yes. So I've, you need some translation in the Balkan countries. But there is one interesting movie that deals with this question. It is produced by Michael Scorsese. Is he Scorsese? Yeah, so you look movies. By the way, I know how to get you and get the truth out of you. So this movie is called Silence. And it has a very interesting story. It is about a priest who goes to Japan. It's based on a true story, I hear. And he wants to spread the good word of Christianity. And he convinces many of the, some people who are following the Japanese religion. I think it's some Zen Buddhism or Shinto, yes. Worshipping the ancestors, no? The ancestors. And they become also priests. So after some time, the Shinto priests see that this is a threat. This new religion comes. They take our people and convert them into their people. And then people stop doing the Shinto religion and go to the Christian religion. And the Shinto priest become highly upset and they begin to follow those Japanese people who have become Christians, and they torture them and they say, you just have to give up Jesus and return to your Shinto religion, and everything will be all right. But if you don't do it, we will torture you. So this priest, this Christian priest who has come from Rome, sees with his own eyes how so many of the people he made priests, these Japanese people, are really cruelly tortured to death. And he asks himself the question, if there is a God, and if we do things on behalf of God, and he's silent, is there really a God? He asks this question. It's a deep question, which I have heard even twice when I was here, this time in Slovenia. Devotees came to me and they said in confidence, Maharaj, I do not know how to understand this. I'm giving my life to... I'm trying to surrender to Krishna, but still so many unpredictable things have happened in my life which are not good. So is there really a merciful God who is answering our prayers? No? This is a very, very old question. I do not know if you have heard about the musical group The Doors. You have there, also there, the poet Jim Morrison, the singer, he says, you cannot petition the Lord with prayers. He never answers. This is the idea which we often hear, and this fear to surrender to the Lord, to give our lives and do the next steps in our life for Krishna, which many of us experience. The seed of the fear, or the origin of the fear, is this doubt that, oh, if I give my life to Krishna, if I give more to Krishna, then perhaps Krishna will not answer. There is one man who wanted to find out where is God. This is traditional Indian story. And he asked people, where do I find God? And the people said, up there somewhere. So this man went to the horizon and he climbed up the horizon. That's possible. And then he expected to find God. He went very high, higher than the Himalayan mountains even. He expected to find God. But all he found up there was silence. Silence. This question, when I surrender or when I give more to Krishna, will I also only meet silence or will I meet reciprocation, is answered in a wonderful way by Krishna himself. And I will tell you in a moment what Krishna says, how, what is the road, he speaks of a road that brings us to him. But I first wanted to give you a historical narration from medieval India of a king who first found the silence of God and then the answer of God. I'm speaking of the great king Jayamala. Jayamala lived in Rajasthan, and there were many small kingdoms just next to his own kingdom. And one of these smaller kingdoms, it was as big as his, was ruled by his brother, by Jayamala's brother. And Jayamala's brother thought, really, our two kingdoms should be one kingdom, and my brother is not so qualified. I want to drive my brother out or kill him. So, but what is the best time for me to invade his kingdom? His ministers told him, why don't you go early in the morning and do your attack then? And they informed him that Jayamala had one practice. In the early morning hours, from 6 to 10 o'clock, not so early, 6 to 10, Jayamala would do worship of his deity. He had in his palace one temple. It was made from marble. It was pure white marble. You would enter there. There was a kirtan room and a lecture room. And then at the end, there was an altar room. And every morning from 6 to 10, Jayamala would spend his time in the altar room. He would worship Krishna by first taking off the night garments. You know, it was a deity of Krishna. Then he would give the deity a beautiful bath. Then he would dry the deities. Then he would put perfume on his body. Then he would dress him. He would put a peacock feather on his head. He would then sing bhajans. Yes, he knew how to sing, Jayamala. No. At the And he would put always two jeweled earrings, one on the right ear, one on the left ear of the deity. Then this took him about 4 hours. He was not Brizzo Plato. He was doing everything step by step, slowly, slowly, slowly. 4 hours of puja. So, and he had made one command. He had said, anyone who comes during this time, from 6 to 10, and disturbs my worship of Krishna, I will ignore him. If, however, he insists of disturbing me, I will have my guards throw him out of my kingdom. I don't want to see such a person. So during this time, everyone, including the mother of Jayamala, were highly afraid to disturb the king. So it was during this time that the attack by the neighboring country was happening. The king knew that the army of Jayamala, of the kingdom, would be like a fly without a head. That's a Bosnian expression for headless activity. You know, the army, in other words, would be not able to function without Jayamala's command. So the attack came. It was a brutal attack. They just went through all the small towns. They burned the people in their houses, and they proceeded towards the capital city. Around 8 o'clock, they arrived before Jayamala's fortress. The ministers came to the queen's mother and said, can you go to your son, please, and tell him today puja's later? He has to come, and he has to lead our army into the battle. Otherwise, we will be overtaken and slaughtered by this brutal invader. The queen mother said, you go, you go. He's a little temperamental. No, no, said, he will not listen to me, and I don't know. He has, once I came, and I said, it's very urgent, and he just looked at me, and from his eyes, two knives were flying. Psh, psh. He is so, he doesn't want to be disturbed in his worship of Krishna. Okay, said the queen's mother, I go. And she went inside and knocked. No answer. Her son was singing, Devaki Nandana Gopala, Devaki. He was, no answer. Then the queen opened very carefully the door. Son, there is an army before the gates of our fortress and our little town. You need to lead the army. Jayamala said, I told you and I'm repeating now, I will not interrupt my worship of the deity. But then everyone will be slaughtered, said the queen's mother. If that is Krishna's will, then anyways, everyone will be slaughtered. And at the time of death, we all will be slaughtered. So, is this your last word? Said the mother. This is my last word, which I always will give. So the queen's mother closed the door and said to the minister, we are all lost. At this moment, something very mystical happened. It's in all the history books of the kingdom. It is told in all the villages from grandfather to grandchild. Jayamala had a horse which was so wild, which only he was able to ride it. It was very high, very strong, and had its own head. My God, this was a battle horse, which, I mean, they are something else, these battle horses. I have seen not photos, but pictures of battle horses. They are much higher than normal horses and so strong and so wild. Only the warrior who knows them and whom they trust can ride them. So Jayamala ran through his palace. He put on the armor. He went to his battle horse. He told the people in the barn, you know, where the horses were kept, to put the armor around the battle horse. He asked people to run to get his lance and his spear. And then he ran out. He asked the people at the door of the fortress to just open the door, and alone, without even gathering his armies, he just galloped with this terrible horse, with this huge horse, into battle, and he fought like the wind fights when it goes to the fields and just flattens all the grains and all the mice and so on, like a storm. He was there. He attacked his brother, and the brother was felled and wounded to the ground. And no one had ever seen any single person in the history of war and in the history of movies even, because you see this, fight like that. Single-handedly, he came back after the whole army finally was fleeing, the enemy's army was fleeing. He jumped off the battle horse, who was sweating, it was white, and it was very difficult to keep the battle horse in the barn. He would go against the walls, and almost he was so much in the mode of Rajagun, so much so much energy. And the battle was over. At this moment, the door of the temple opened, and Jayadama ran out and asked, "Where is the horse? Where are my weapons? Where is the armies? I have to fight." It was 10 o'clock. The people looked at him and said, You came out, it was around 8 o'clock, and you were alone with your horse, fighting so fiercely, like a storm, so that you killed many of the enemies and the rest ran away. "No," said Jayadama, "I was doing my worship." "No, Jayamala, we saw you," said the minister. "You were running, you were demanding your weapons. The people at the gate said you came so fast, they just jumped away to not be run down by your horse. You were so wild, you screamed, 'Jai Shri Krishna,' and then you ran, you galloped into battle." "No," said Jayadama, "I'm here, I did my puja." Then he was thinking, "I have surrendered to the Lord, maybe he has protected me." So he went into the temple room, and he looked at the deity. The deity looked at him, and one of the earrings was missing from the ear. Jayamala said, "Strange, I know I put one earring on the left ear, and I took a second earring, and I put it on the right ear, like I do every morning. But there is only one earring. So he searched. Then a little later, someone came and said, "Oh, king, 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 we found an earring on the battlefield." "What? Show me the earring." And it was this very special earring which had rubies and smaragds and emeralds. And, you know, really good earring. And then Jayamala again went to the deity and said, "Tell me, did you make a trick? Did you come out and ride my battle horse? Did you take on the guide of Jayamala?" So he ran back and to the battle horse, and he saw the battle horse was just... It was, you know, have you seen horses after they have raced? It takes them half an hour to cool down, sometimes an hour, because they have given everything into the race. Sweat was there, white sweat all over. The eyes were rolling, and it was still ready to go. And yes, the battle horse had been ridden. It was in battle. It was covered with blood, and so on. And Jayamala went back to the temple and said, "My Lord, I'm worshipping you now since so many years, from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock, and you have never ever shown your darshan to me. But you showed your darshan to my brother who came to attack. You showed your darshan to the enemy soldiers. My Lord, you are not fair. If you don't help me now, I will kill myself." And he took out his knife, and he was ready to kill himself when a black hand came, captured his hand, and say, "Don't do it." He looked at the hand, and he fell in ecstasy because it was the hand of the Lord. "Every grandfather knows this child. This knows his child, yes, but knows the story which he tells to his grandchild in this state of, how do you say, Rajasthan. It is a story which has found its entry into a very nice book. This book is called Bhaktamala, which has the experiences of the Bhaktas, the great devotees of the Lord. It is recounted, and the writer, Nabadas, has written it because he saw there were quarrels between the different sampradayas or lineages of Vaishnavas. So he thought, by writing down the experiences of many devotees from many different lineages, different movements, no, and collecting them in one book, Bhaktamala, he would end the quarrel amongst Vaishnavas for theological differences. No, there's Bhaktamala. He's describing this in the book, that this is his mission. So yes, Krishna has his ways. He is describing in the 10th canto to the gopis that sometimes Krishna doesn't show himself immediately just to make the longing or the desire in the devotee's heart to have his darshan stronger. And then when the desire to have the Lord's presence becomes so, you could say, gets such a good temperature, such hot, such intense temperature, then this will burn away from the heart all the contaminations, all the inner obstacles, all the problems. Now you might say, "Okay, Maharaj, You have in the first part of your lecture said, spoken about the silence of the God. You have said that this is a big question in the society. You have also said that many of the devotees in the movement for Krishna consciousness may not be sure that Krishna will be there when they surrender. And then in the end, you have given one historical story from the Bhaktamala where you spoke about an incident, how Krishna breaks the silence. What would you like us to take home now? That we think God will not answer, or that God will answer? What is your thought? So I want to answer this question very much. My dear devotees, my dear friends, and my dear skeptics in the audience, I myself, this was and sometimes still is a central question of my own spiritual life. This question, is there anything we can do to make the sun rise? Or is, to speak in less poetic words, is there anything the human being can do to bring about a God realization, that God comes? I think the only one who can answer this question is Krishna himself. And yes, there is something which he gave. It is the only verse which appears in the Bhagavatam two times. And you must know about sacred scriptures. They never repeat themselves. If it happens that they repeat themselves and that the same text appears two times, then this is one of the central messages of that sacred scripture. So there is this one verse. I want to read it to you. It is spoken by Krishna in a certain context. This is perhaps at this time a little controversial when we have so many divorces in ISKCON and in the world. But I think you are ready to hear it. You are mature enough. So it is about this. There was a village where highly qualified brahmanas worshipped the god according to very complex ritualistic ceremonies called yagyas. Now it so happened that their wives had heard about Krishna from the people who came to that village from the forests and the villages to sell the brahmanas clay pots and different leaves, mango leaves, and other items they needed for their sacrifice. So these wives had heard about Krishna. If you would be so kind to turn around and look at this picture, they had heard about Krishna's unique loveliness, who attracts all souls to him by his enchanting beauty and sweetness also. They had heard about him, and in their hearts they developed love for Krishna. They had never seen him. It's a little bit like perhaps we here in this room. We all have heard about Krishna, maybe through literature, maybe we saw a good movie about Krishna in the movie places, maybe we don't know, other movies about Krishna. Mahabharata. No? Mahabharata. I know everything. This is the theme song of a movie about where Krishna appears, and it always has this. It drives you crazy, but it is also very good. Mahabharat, Mahabharat. So there was so just like you have heard Krishna, but perhaps not all of you have met Krishna or have had a revelation in their hearts. So these Brahmana wives were in the same category. They had heard regularly from the simple people who came and sold things in the village about Krishna, and they developed the desire to meet Krishna. So one day Krishna was nearby, he knew, and he said with a smile on his face, he said, "I'm actually very hungry." So his cowherd boyfriends who were with him, "Mrs. Krishna is hungry, so let us get some food." So they, "Where will we get food?" Krishna said, "Go to this village of the Brahmanas get some food from there." So when the wives of the Brahmanas heard that Krishna was nearby, A, and B, that there was a chance to serve him by bringing him foodstuffs, they went quickly into their kitchens and took the foodstuffs, which was meant for the complicated yagya that was going on, and they put it on big plates like this. They put the plates on the head, and they rushed into the forest. When their husbands saw their wives making a big beeline, so to say, and going off into the forest, they said, "Where are you going?" The wives looked at him. "You can't stop us." "You are wives, no? Where are you going with the food which is meant for the yagya, for the sacrifice?" "We're going to see Krishna." "What? You're not meant to leave the house and go to another male person? This is very irreligious. You cannot stop us." And they just took them aside and went to the forest. Now, in the system of the society, if a housewife, a married wife, would leave the house to bring the food which was cooked, not to the husband's, but bring it to another man, that was a big problem. She was never allowed back in the house. Never, ever. Perhaps in the South European countries, similar rules are there. Imagine you come home, you're very hungry, the Mushkatsky is very hungry, then the wife takes the food from the table and said, "I'm going to Philippe from Italy." You know, then this could be a problem. I think I have our men are very moved. They are laughing very loud. So that I think yes, I can see this would be problematic. These Brahmanas didn't believe in Krishna. They believed in demigods, devatas, higher beings, but not one supreme being. So they said, "Okay, never come back here." So they were so full of ecstasy, they didn't even worry a bit about this last sentence. And they went and they saw Krishna. my dear devotees and dear friends, and also dear those who made the first time into the temple, you must know that the quality of Krishna is he is supremely attractive. In other words, when one has even a little insight or a little, if the eyes fall for a moment on Krishna, one is everything else in comparison, your home, your education, your wealth which you have accumulated, your various commitments in society, they all appear to be very trivial. Trivial means insignificant. Tucha means very small. And they are no reason to keep you back, to attract you back away from Krishna. So the Brahmana wives, they saw Krishna, how he was dressed in a yellow garment, how he had a mango twig with fresh blossoms over one ear, how he was decorated with a beautiful garland of forest flowers that went very much below the knees. It was very large. And what they saw was Krishna's beautiful, enchanting eyes. But what really made them totally fascinated is they saw how Krishna had a lotus flower in his hand and was just whirling it around like this. With this he said, look, I have, just like I have this lotus flower in my hand, I have your hearts in my hand. And they agreed to this. Yes, we are yours. Then they offered the feast which they had brought to Krishna and his friends. And then they said, we want to stay now with you. We want to be near with you, near you, and we don't want to return home. And at that time, Krishna gave this beautiful statement. He said, Shravana darshana dhyanan mayi bhavo nukirtanat natata sanikarashena pratiyata tatogriyam. He said, transcendental love, which is the quality to be always in my association, arises by four things: by hearing about me, by seeing my deity form who is worshipped on the altar, by meditating on me, and finally by faithfully chanting my glories. The same result is not achieved by being close to me. So please go back to your homes and do these things. Yeah, but they said, but there is no home any longer for us. When we left, the last word our husband said was, never come back. Krishna said, they will worship you when you come back. I will arrange that. But how can we go back after seeing you? And then Krishna answered, when you want to see me, you just look and you will be able to see me everywhere. So when the ladies went back, it had taken them 1.5 hours or so to come to Krishna in the forest, but it took them 2 days to come back because they wanted to see Krishna so much, and whenever they wanted this, they saw Krishna before them because Krishna had blessed them with this internal ability to be always to see him everywhere, because really Krishna is everywhere. If you are blessed with the eyes to see him, you will see him. So I think this is a nice analogy. Transcendental love is the qualification to be in Krishna's presence. And do you remember how it arises in us? By hearing about Krishna, by seeing the deity on the altar, by meditating about Krishna and not falling asleep while you do. Yes, and Manya, you know, by chanting his glories, yes, and like in the holy names or in some bhajans, no? So this is, I think, Krishna is coming and making himself available to those who take to these devotional processes. I'm seeing this list, you know, and when I see that, I immediately make a list and a plan. Hearing about me, yes. Soon I will go to India and I will study one book which is full of all the informations about Krishna. That I will do it here. Seeing deity forms, I have wonderful photos with me. Meditating on me, I do that regularly. And chanting, yes, I also do. So I will put a little bit about this one thing I'm not doing so regularly. I will put this more in my life, I think. Yeah. One last thing about meeting Krishna. I want to ask you, when you want to have honey, where do you go? There is a lotus. I want to say, if you want to have lotus honey, Shriji, have you ever thought about lotus honey? That's a honey, you know, that's a real thing. Do you go to the lotus flowers which grow in the pond, or is there another place you go to? What? Beehive, the beehive. If I want to have honey, I will not go to the flowers, I will go to the beehive. That is the place where those live who know how to collect honey. So if I want to be with Krishna, don't go directly to Krishna. Go to the lovers of God. Go to the lovers of God. They are like bees who have collected the honey from Krishna's lotus feet. We say like this in our language, very poetic. And you will get this honey. And I think that was perhaps the great success in our holy name retreat. We were with very serious devotees engaged in chanting, and there was a lot of nectar flowing. No? So if you want to know about God, go to those who have his sangha. I would love to meet my grandfather and tell him, "Oh, grandfather, I have become older now. I can answer your questions now." But you must agree to listen to me. And the grandfather would look at me, and because he loves me very much, he would say, "Okay, tell me what you learned. You are now 5 years a monk." And I said, "Grandfather, you were telling me that when I jump and surrender to Krishna, I might have the same experience which you had when you jumped out of the window and you broke your back. But I will tell you, it is not so. The Lord does answer, but he answers in his way. we cannot put conditions to him. He will see if we are following his conditions, if he, his guidelines, I would say. And these things are very nice, you know. Transcendental love for me, which is the qualification to see me, arises by the devotional processes of hearing about me. Good, then I will read you my poem. Yeah, I have read a poem. It's called The Road of Tears. May I read it to you? Haribo, what does this mean? Yes, okay. New language, yes. So, this is about a discussion between a guru and a disciple. Yes? The disciple is very disappointed. He comes to the guru to tell him his doubts. He has a heavy heart. It is almost broken. He says, who can say I have never tried? All those mantras I have chanted. All those four rules and regulations I kept. All the additional vows that kept me awake for so many lonely nights. All those pilgrimages I have made, sacrifices, baths in ice-cold water. What to speak of persistently ignoring the request of my mind and my senses to what is most dear to them. No? The mind wants and the senses want physical enjoyment, and sometimes devotees say, no, no, there are four rules and regulations. The result, in big letters, nothing. All this has brought me to is desperation. The old emptiness in the heart has only become greater. Guru Maharaj hears all this and then replies, it seems you have done your best to come before the divine couple, but have you ever tried to act in such a way that Radha and Krishna can come before you? Have you built a road for them so that they can come to you? The road of tears? The disciple says, the road of tears? What tears? The guru, tears of the soul. There are different kinds of tears. Body tears, we cry in physical pain. Mind tears, we cry when emotionally hurt. And sweet tears that come from the soul. As the soul awakens to its only real need, the soul's need to enter into the one relationship. My dear disciple, this road of tears can't be found on Google. It begins from your own heart. But it is so attractive to the divine couple that they cannot even imagine ignoring this road. Just begin to build this road. This alone makes them feel they must come before you. The disciple thinks a road of tears and asked, does this road need many tears? I have cried all my tears for other things. I'm completely empty inside. How can I possibly build now a long road of tears? The guru begins to become enthusiastic. I'm seeing before my eyes Chandramouli Maharaj. Don't worry! There are oceans of tears arrested in your heart. You only need to learn to direct them to the right course. Then if your feelings are directed towards Krishna, all these tears become released. But before a downpour, there's a flashing of lightning. Similarly, now the poem is getting too. I have to change that. So the end is, there are oceans of tears arrested. Arrested means kept or locked up in your heart. You only need to learn to direct them to the right course. Then they become released, like a downpour. So this is a very nice thing. Krishna wants all of us to build our road for him as soon as we can. Think of so much other construction work. This is the most important construction work. Become a road builder. We always think we should do something to come to God, and then he is, how do you say, obliged perhaps to come before us. We demand him to come on our terms. But just like he showed to Jayamala, he has his own plan. When he comes, he is his own person. And the only thing that attracts him is this bhakti, which is cultivated by a few processes which we have heard. Now, hear about him, worship him in the deity form, meditate about him, you know, think often of him, and that becomes a meditation, and then finally chanting his glories. Yes, this is what I wanted to leave here, my little gift to all of you. I thank you very much for listening so nicely. Although it is so hot, I hope it has become a little bit more tolerable. For me, it's very cool. I have the AC right on my back. I hope for you it's also. It was very nice to be in your to be in your country. When we walked today through Ljubljana a little bit, we walked from the restaurant to the fully washed car of Moksha Rupi. We saw the country is very peaceful. Even the pigeons were very peaceful. We could walk through them. We could say, greet everyone, hello. A very nice temperament. And also in the devotee community, I see there's so much just nice relationships amongst devotees. And I have heard about this nice program where you invite old devotees to come back. I heard there was a reunion, and the devotees in the temple think how they can acknowledge the wonderful qualities of our older devotees and encourage them more in their spiritual life. It's a very, very nice yatra. Small but very attractive. Perhaps when many people come together, many, then it's a little more complicated, but this is a very nice. I wish you all the best. Also, you have such a nice leader in our Ananta Prabhu, and many senior devotees come and visit here. It is a blessed yatra, really very impressed. I will now do a little bit more kirtan, and then I have to rush. I will go this evening to Sarajevo, and tomorrow, I forgot the exact plan, but there will be lectures for devotees and one public program called Yoga is Music. No, we started this many years ago with a kirtan concert tour through the Balkans, and it's still going on there. So we are very happy to go there for two days only. It will be brief, and then I return to Germany and stay a little, and then I will go into the desert. Yes. We have arranged a childhood dream. I had a child. As a child, I wanted to be in the desert with the Bedouins and the camels. Children have such desires. I think you also must have had such desires. And when I was in Dubai, the devotee said, "Maharaj, what do you want?" What do I want? I don't need much, little prasadam and kirtan, and, holy pilgrimage. No, what do you really want? I said, no, it's, I'm real here. I'm this is my life. I'm doing 50 years. This is not that I'm pretend. You can't pretend for 50 years something. You can do it for perhaps 5 years, but not 50. Any desire you have. I said, I mean, if you ask like this, let me think, you know. And I said, I have two unfulfilled desires. I want to go to China and preach in China one day when Krishna wants, and I would love to give a retreat in the desert, which I would entitle The Art of Complete Transformation. Oh, that is very easy to arrange. And then there is the Wadi Ram desert. It is a very famous desert in Jordan. Shiji, I have not heard that there are mushrooms, but perhaps there are. So there is there we have rented some tents, but these are really AC tents. You know, they are available, and I will also, I have asked if I can just be dropped with a jeep in the midst of the desert with 4 liters of water, and then I will chant the whole day in the desert. That would be very nice also. I want to be in that complete silence and want to see if the mind is perhaps also a little bit more silent, and so, and want to make an experiment. So good. And then we have many guests, international guests. The booking is full already for that retreat. We cannot have any others, but maybe one day we will do a desert retreat for the Slovenian yatra. I think you would love, especially the young people would love to see this area.